And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to Friday's 9 till noon show. It is 4 minutes past 9 on this Friday, the 18th of October, and it is a show that's packed to the rafters. The first hour of the show, as always, on a Friday, is dedicated to a review of the big stories of the day and the week. We have a great panel lined up. I'll introduce them to you in a moment. Later on, we are going to ease our way into the weekend with That's Entertainment from 11. And throughout the show, we're going to be recognising where we're broadcasting from today. We are broadcasting live from Rush Fitness in Lisnennan in Letterkenny, and it is to celebrate 10 years in business. It's their 10-year anniversary. We look forward to chatting to Emmett, Marie and the team. That's all coming up a little later on. But we are going to say good morning to our panel right now. And I'll say good morning first, if that's okay, to Deputy Joe McHugh, former Education Minister. Good morning, Deputy. Thank you very much for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for the invite.
No, it's good to have you with us. And also Sandra Haughey, Sinn Féin member and former local election candidate. Sandra, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, John. Your listeners.
Great to see you. And Damien Dowd, the editor of the Inishowen Independent, will be joining us in the not-too-distant future. But just to a bit of news information we received overnight, I might put it to you, Deputy Joe McHugh, given the fact that you are an elected representative, and that's the news from the RSA that all of Inishowen, 44-odd thousand, is it, with one single test centre there, does not have a single tester actually permanently based in Inishowen. In fact, there are just four testers across this entire county, three in Letterkenny, one in Donegal Town. Now, they will say the testers move around to meet demand, right? Well, the demand is I know there are people waiting over a year for a driving test in Inishowen. It's ridiculous, isn't it, in this day and age, especially in a county that has had so much tragedy on our road, that we are so underserved in terms of getting people tested to be competent, legal drivers on our roads.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest issues we get across our desk in the constituency office is people looking for driving tests at short notice. And these could be people working in frontline service or young people who've just got a job. And with that in mind, I mean, there is a demand there. And when we talk about Inishowen, we talk about, you know, I know everybody knows this, like it's a landmass bigger than County Louth, and it's a population bigger than County Leitrim. So until we get those, you know, weighted comparisons between geography and population, we're always going to be fighting that on the basis that Donegal has a test centre, two test centres in Donegal Town and Letterkenny. But look, that's not acceptable. And certainly,
but just in case, let's just imagine for a moment, actually state for a moment, it's the Road Safety Authority that's responsible for this. Surely the need shouldn't be based on how many heads there are. It should be based on, you know, road traffic statistics, for an example. That would be a probably more indicative and important factor than how many people live in a certain area.
Well, look, that's an argument that can be made. Obviously, that argument has not been adhered to. It's based on population and it's based on geography. And sometimes it's based on, you know, this centralizing philosophy that has been there for a long time. Because remember, Greg, we don't have to go back that too long ago when there was a big debate about the downgrading of Malinhead Coast Guard Station and Mizenhead Coast Guard Station to located in Athlone. So there is a madness there in terms of centralisation that we have to be vigilant of. And look, that is an argument in terms of sending out strong messages, where there is high, you know, or negative road statistics associated with tragedies and accidents, and that is an argument.
But is it unacceptable to you? Would it be unacceptable to you that there isn't a tester in Inishowen?
Yeah, it would be, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sandra Haughey, good morning to you. As I say, this wasn't necessarily down for discussion, but it's just one of those, we all have an opinion on this, don't we? What's your feelings about that revelation? Four testers for the entire county, just one in Donegal Town with a huge catchment area and none in Inishowen. And, you know, they'll say, well, we'll move them from Letterkenny to Inishowen if need be, but there's a constant demand in Letterkenny as well. I don't think you can explain your way out of the ridiculousness of this situation.
No, it's very difficult to explain it away, Greg. One of the things too that I would kind of say is, with us being such a rural county, young people need their cars, they need their driving licenses to get to work. Basically what Joe said there too. But yeah, it's disgraceful at this day and age. But I do agree with what you said there as well, that it should be on the road traffic accidents in relation to the RSA, because they are the authority that's enforcing this. So yeah, it definitely, there should be more, and there should be a test centre in Bulgana.
Yeah, there is a test centre in Inishowen, but I take your point. It's the lack of a tester there.
Tester, sorry, yeah.
No problem, Sandra. It's just to make sure that we're all on the same page. 086 60 25,000, by the way. I don't think I gave you the contact details at the start of the show. 086 60 25,000, or you can give us a call in 0749125,000, or feel free to email comments at highlandradio.com. Our third party on the panel today is Damien Dowds. He's editor of the Inishowen Independent. Damien, thanks for joining us.
Morning, Greg. How are you doing?
Not too bad at all. Just before we move on to some of our schedule stuff, we were just reflecting on the news from the Road Safety Authority that there are no driver testers based in Inishowen at all. Three in Letterkenny, one in Donegal Town, as an Inishowen man. I'm sure you're contacted constantly, like I am, by people waiting over a year for a test in Inishowen. This news is going to be a sickener because they're waiting on something that they might feel now may never arrive.
And in a place like Inishowen, where, you know, while we do have low link buses and so on, public transport is as limited as it is, you know, obviously having access to a car and having access to being able to drive the car under your own steam and not having to have a nominated driver with you is more than important. So it's typical of the thing, really. And I suppose, you know, in the past, I also understood that there was a panel of testers in the county that moved around based to the different test centre, whether that would be in Letterkenny, whether it would be in the west of the county, whether it would be in Buncrana. But the fact that there's none allocated here by the RSA just shows the type of neglect that you get when you're far away from the centre.
Yeah, okay. Listen, I appreciate your input on that. We've an awful lot to get through in terms of conversations this morning, but we are also covering developing stories as well. And I'm very pleased to welcome onto the programme the Minister of State for Transport, James Lawless. James, thanks very much for your time. Thank you for joining us. It's greatly appreciated.
Good morning. Good to be with you today.
Right, James, as you might know, there was some commentary, and in fairness, it came from Emerald Airlines. There was some commentary about the passenger cap in Dublin, which obviously it's a big story. But there was a suggestion from Emerald Airlines that there was a real threat to the Donegal-Dublin-Dublin-Donegal flights because they are not commercially viable for that airline. And if they had to review their passenger numbers as part of conforming to that cap, that those flights could be lost. And as you would know, there are 430 cancer patients currently availing of those flights to seek treatment that they can't get locally, not to mention carers and family members and what have you. And there's been a great deal of concern, but also optimism that the government would see sense. So my understanding is that you have given some clarification in relation to the future of this PSO service. And what is that, Minister?
Well, I do have good news on that, and I have intervened on that to make sure that those flights are protected. But just to maybe circle back briefly to the point about the government seeing sense, I do think it's important just to put it out there. The Dublin Airport cap is not a decision of government. It's not something that we want to see. It's not a policy decision. It's a planning constraint imposed by Mbor Planola. So just so it's something outside of our control.
And just to clarify, I wasn't referencing that. I was being a little bit parochial and referencing only the cancer flights.
Yeah,
but I do appreciate your clarification.
Yeah, because if I could make another decision to reverse it, I would do so in the morning. But we're stuck with the planning situation, trying to work through that. So in terms of the Emerald Airline flights, so I'm familiar with the airport. And actually, when I was appointed as a minister in this department in July, one of my first visits was actually up to Carrickfinn to visit the airport and the team there. So I'm very aware of the importance to the region and to the county. And I actually met with the Emerald Airlines team, Keith Butler and Connor, yesterday in Enster House. I brought them into my office to discuss this issue. And I suppose the threat is arising because of the cap at Dublin Airport. There is pressure on all airlines coming from the regulator to reduce their flights next year by 5%. And that was being apportioned equally. Now, I think that's a bit unfair on smaller airlines like Emerald Airlines, who, in fairness, are a new emerging company since 2022, have really done well, really taken a great product to market in Donegal, but also around Ireland and the UK, and really, really gone from strength to strength, and long may that continue. So I spoke to the regulator, and I also spoke to, with my team, we looked at some European regulation. And because they operate what's called a public service route, which is state funded to an extent, state subsidized, there is an exemption in European law for those type of routes. So I have asked the regulator to look at that now and say, look, can we ring fence these slots for Emirates Airlines? And I'm quite confident that they can do that. So that means effectively that Donegal Dublin PSO route is protected and should be exempt from the cap. And I think that's a good day's work. I'm very happy with that result. And just to say, in fairness to Pat the Cope, my colleague on the ground there, and indeed Minister McConnellogue, they both were in my ear about this for the last number of weeks, and rightly so. And they certainly made me aware this was an issue. But I would have been aware anyway from dealings with the airline and from visiting Carrickfinn myself over the summer.
Well, listen, well done. The government comes in for an awful lot of stick, and I think it's right to recognise when something is done, which is brings a lot of comfort to people. So thank you very much for that, James. Just finally, before I let you go, we got figures from the RSA, and I think it was mentioned to you that we'd be mentioning this. As you would know, the Inishowen Peninsula, it's the size of Laos. It's got 45,000 people living there, and it's got one driver test centre, and the RSA hasn't got a single tester appointed to that area. There are people waiting over a year just to get on the road legally and to determine whether or not they're fit to be on the road. The entire county, 170,000-odd, just four testers. Now, they do move around. I'm not saying there aren't tests that are done in and shown right, but given the fact that this is a safety issue, surely Donegal should get some preferential treatment in the allocation of driving testers, particularly for the people of Inishowen listening today.
No, look, I completely agree with that, actually. And I'll be frank, I'm not happy with the performance of the RSA as an authority. They haven't met their standards on operations, including NCTs, including driver tests, including a number of areas that they have been tasked with. And people pay for these services. You know, these are services that people have an expectation to get the service that they're paying for. So it's actually got to the point where we are restructuring and reforming the RSA because of the failure of them to meet operational targets. And that's something that I expect will be brought to Cabinet next week. So we'll have a very different operational framework in the new year on that. But just in terms of the immediate issue, I've given sanction for an extra 70 driving testers to be recruited. And that process is underway to meet the deficit that's there. And I would be very hopeful, and indeed I will actually say to them that, given what you've highlighted to me this morning, the Donegal has below its fair share and needs those resources allocated.
All right, James, thanks very much. Well done on the flights again. I do appreciate it. Take care of yourself. That was Deputy James Lawless, no, Transport Minister, Minister of State for Transport, James Lawless, right, I got there in the end. Okay, we still have our guests, and we've an awful lot to get through, some really interesting stuff. And it is the Friday panel here in the 9 till noon show, and we're looking forward to chatting to the team from Rush Fitness a little later on in the show. Sinn Féin's been criticised in recent weeks for its handling of a number of controversies, including that former press officer, Michael McMonagall, ex-senator Niall O'Donoghue. The party leader has faced numerous interviews in the media and had to deal with heavy scrutiny in the Dáil. With an election looming, can the party under Mary Lou McDonald's stewardship have any success? Should she be replaced? Would it be too late for that to make any material difference? Or maybe she's handled these crises in a very effective way. I'll ask you first, if that's okay, as a member of Sinn Féin, Sandra Haughey, what do you think?
I believe that everything was dealt with correctly. Over the last week, we've had our party, Patrick McLaughlin has been on with me, Greg. Pierce has been on, Mary Lou has been on. There's been statements released on everything. And it's from the timeline that's given and all of them statements, this is correct. They dealt with it correctly. Things were actioned right away. The Michael McGonigal case, there's no excuse for two press officers giving references to this fellow, It was just, it's beyond belief. In relation to the other cases, Niall O'Donoghue, I would be very proud of the party and the way they dealt with it in relation to mental health issues. I'm very happy with the way they've done it. Mm-hmm. I know everyone's saying that they should have done it differently. But maybe if people start to look at people that have lost people through suicide and stuff, through mental health issues, they would look at it very differently.
Of course. And with respect to the senator, there's lots of people too with mental health issues that don't message 17-year-olds. I don't mean that. I don't mean that in any way.
I'm not defending what he did, Greg, under any circumstances.
Just in relation to that, the ex-senator Niall O'Donoghue, he Sinn Féin did give him a very nice send-off by way of a statement, Mary Lou McDonald thanking him for all of his contributions and what he'd achieved and what he'd added to the party. That was in the knowledge that he was stepping down for the reasons we don't really need to go into, but it was inappropriate text to a to someone under 18. Do you think there was one error in maybe he could have resigned off his own statement and the party said nothing? That would have protected his mental health and perhaps not have left them in the situation that they find themselves now.
Yeah, well, perhaps that's it. Hindsight's a wonderful thing, but I still agree with the way things were done. And I think if everyone that has employed people thought the same way, then we would be in a very different, you know, I know of incidences where HR were involved in cases and they people ended up taking their life because they weren't supportive. So, like, that was one of the reasons I'd be very proud of the party and the way they dealt with us. Now, 100% what he did was, it was disgraceful, you know, and he has suffered for that, you know. As for Mary Lou McDonald, I would have 100% faith in her. I think she has carried herself absolutely brilliantly over the last few weeks, this last week. Everything she has done has been to support the party, and I do believe that it's in the best interest of the party. Our guidelines are thorough, they're robust, they're there, they're independent, they're not members of the party dealing with these issues, it's outside of the party.
Okay, but just one final question before I put it to the other guests. Whilst you, your assessment, from your perspective, completely accurate, is it perceptions nine-tenths of reality or some phrase along those lines? Even if she's handled everything perfectly in your view, if we take in the likes of, say, for instance, the referendi, maybe the flip-flopping on immigration, as some would say, I'm not saying that's what it was, as some would see it, even if she's handled everything very well as best as she can, is there a toxicity around her now that means the party can only bounce back and have electoral success if she was replaced, even if you don't believe she needs to be replaced, if that makes sense? Do you know what I mean? Sometimes someone has to go, even if they don't deserve to go.
I understand what you're saying, Greg. The referendum and immigration, we were slow off the mark. That's, you know, we held our hands up. We made the mistake. You know, this could happen. What has happened, there's just been an onslaught over the last number of days. These issues have all come at the one time. Now, any leader could have to deal with us at any time. That's the way it is. There's no magic wand to take this stuff away. And that's where we are now. We're dealing with it.
Okay.
And we just have to get through it.
I get you. Damien Dads, what's your assessment of, I suppose, the few weeks that Sinn Féin has had, how it's handled the various controversies, and, you know, as I put it to Sandra there, its future under the stewardship of Mary Lou McDonald?
I suppose there's been so many controversies, Greg. It strikes me as a party that's somehow ill at ease with itself. The party has, famously or infamously, a very strict discipline and very little is ever said outside of school, so to speak. So the fact that so many things have burst out one on top of the other suggests that, you know, there's quite a lot going on behind the scenes and under the surface there that maybe the voting public aren't aware of. The O'Donnell case is probably the one in the Republic that's going to cause the greatest damage to Sinn Féin, because while Niall O'Donnell was able to resign from the party at whatever date in September it was, he stayed on in the Shannon and stayed on in the Oireachtas, and the party leader gave him a glowing reference or a glowing press release praising him for all his good work when he finally resigned. I see today on the front page of one of the national newspapers he continued to draw down expenses for the period up until his resignation from the Shannon, having resigned from the party some months prior to that. But a lot of that stuff is fairly dubious. And look, it's strange to see it. I think Sinn Féin run a different type of hierarchy or structure. The party is governed more by the Ard Cóiri, it seems, than by the party leader. And, you know, the lack of curiosity sometimes that the party leader has shown into the details of some of these, the Stanley case, for example, the nature of the complaint that was made against a long-serving TD like Brian Stanley, the lack of curiosity about the nature of the complaint. You don't need to know all the ins and outs, but, you know, Was it relating to a road traffic offence? Was it relating to a sexual offence? I mean, there's differences there that probably, you know, it's surprising that the party leader didn't inquire into the kind of the nature of them. It's probably constrained in what you can do, given the way the party's structured and given the way that Ard Cooilley seems to take the decisions rather than the party leader, as would be the case in all other parties. And as for Sinn Féin under Mary Lou, look, she had a brilliant campaign in the 2020 general election. I mean, it's Mary Lou that helped Sinn Féin to hit the heights that it did and to win a record number of seats. So in an election campaign, she's shown herself once before to be a formidable campaigner. It's possible she would do it again. It's hard to see it, truth be told, but there's no prospect of Sinn Féin being able to change a party leader at this stage.
Yeah, so, of course, we don't know. They are facing into an election whereby, respectfully, they are also taking on elements of the media as well. I mean, you only have to look at the forensic scrutiny that the party faces on the likes of RTE and elsewhere to realise it's going to be a great, great challenge for them. Deputy Joe McHugh, what's your view on this? I suppose, reflecting on the last couple of months for Sinn Féin, but also to their prospects in the election under Mary Lou MacDonald. And as Damien quite rightly pointed out, probably too late to change that in any case, but would it make a difference?
Well, look, I think Damien covered it quite substantially there. And, you know, there are three issues here, and I don't want to go over the whole thing again, but I'd just like to zone in on the issue around, you know, hindsight and the issue around what should have happened. And I'm not saying, you know, that the person who has an authority on 2020 hindsight, that is not the point I'm making. The point I'm making is, if Sinn Féin were to do it all again, would they have put out that statement? Would Mary Lou MacDonald put out the statement in relation to former Senator Niall O'Donoghue? Possibly not. And to conflate mental health with that issue, I think that's the issue that should be further explored as well. Like what measures were in place, or what private measures were in place in terms of if there was a mental health issue, what was done? I would have questions around that. But the issue was very specifically to do with a legal matter, an issue that was dealt with the party and internally, but publicly then that statement went out, which obviously wasn't given any indication or any insight into what the real issue was. So going back on what should have been done, that was the biggest mistake. And secondly, the issue of trying to bring mental health into it, I think every organisation, be it public or private, have to have measures in place to deal with mental health. And my question would be, what measures were implemented in relation to that?
Yeah, there's a lot of conversation about hindsight today. I think the public expect foresight from their politicians. Right, okay. Just one final point in relation to that. I mean, a lot of people, when Leo Varadkar left the leadership of Fine Gael, they thought, well, there must be a reason for that. Now, if there was a reason outside of anything that we know, it would have come out at this point. It was just a decision was made by that party. And as it turns out, it seems to have been a very wise decision. Do you think Sinn Féin are a little bit in the Fine Gael position in that whilst Leo Varadkar for many was performing very well, and for many Mary Lou MacDonald is performing very well, there comes a time where you do need to reorganise? The public sort of need that, Joe.
Well, look, I'm certainly not going to speak on the internal matters of what Sinn Féin need to do with their leadership, but I am reminded of a time when there was a big debate around Fine Gael leadership with Andy Kenny, and, you know, what ensued afterwards in terms of a leadership heave and all that. So I know what's involved in terms of that type of introspective conversation that goes on within parties. So look, Sinn Féin, as Damien pointed out, they may have a different model of leadership to Fine Gael. I mean, we're very much a grassroots-based organisation, and Sinn Féin, from the outside looking in, a different model of leadership, and I wouldn't, it would certainly be above my expertise to outside of my expertise to make a comment as to what they should or shouldn't do before
well,
an
you
election.
You kind of did while explaining why you wouldn't.
I think they should, though, you... Greg. I mean, I think the last time that Sinn Féin had a leadership election was in the North, where they had Michelle O'Neill and John O'Dowd, but it was all done in a very, very odd way. You know, Sinn Féin will be well served to have a traditional leadership election and not one where, you know, a candidate that's not the nominee and not the boy that's been picked or the woman that's been picked for the position is able to have a proper leadership contest. It would actually serve Sinn Féin well that they would have that, because the prospective leaders would be kind of road tested through it all. The structure of Sinn Féin is one for them to kind of look at, but it's like a party. As I say, there's growing pains or something going on there. Like, and it's not at ease with itself.
Okay.
And the structures that it has contributes to the difficulties that it finds itself in.
Right, before we move on, Sandra, is that sort of picture that's painted of Sinn Féin, does that sound like the party you're a loyal member of, the way it's being framed?
No, it doesn't, Greg. That's sort of not the way things are. I know what Damien and Walter were saying, but I would be comfortable with the way things are done at present. And I would have confidence within Mary Lou to continue to take us into the next general election, which is probably weeks away at this stage. And I would have also confidence in hopefully having Padraig McLaughlin and Pierce Doherty at the cabinet table in the next time round.
Okay, well, we'll see and watch on with interest. Okay, it is the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We're in the company of our Friday panel, and we'll be back with much more from them and your comments as they come in after we take a quick break. Yeah, really looking forward to chatting to Emmett Murray and the team after 10 o'clock. We're in the company at the moment of Deputy Joe McHugh, from Education Minister, Damien Dowds, editor of the Inishowen Independent, and Sandra Haughey, Sinn Féin member and former local election candidate. So when is the election going to be? We don't really know. They don't really need to give an awful lot of notice. And we'd all like to know, because we've all got things we probably need to be able to do and plan. But anyway, it's going to be another interesting election in Donegal. And I know for some who are members of parties, it can be difficult talking about other parties and their strategies, but it does impact all candidates right across the region. And with that in mind, 100% Redress this week confirmed it is running a candidate in Donegal in the next general election. Charles Ward, a fine candidate, he's a healthcare worker from Aranmore Island. He now lives in Drumkeen with his wife and their children, and he's also very heavily affected by the DCB crisis. There have been question marks raised over the decision, with some suggesting it could split the alternative to the government vote. What do you think of the decision, Damien? I'll start with you, if that's okay. What do you think of the decision? Because I say, my understanding is there was a lot of internal conversation. I do believe personally that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have very strong loyal support that won't wobble, and that perhaps maybe it could be a Sinn Féin vote, for an example, a Padraig McLaughlin vote that ends up going to a 100% redress councillor. But what's your assessment of it? You're on the ground up there, albeit that Charles is standing outside the area.
I suppose that's the first thing that's odd. I mean, that's odd about this is, you know, Inishowen is ground zero for the defective blocks concrete crisis, and there's two very strong candidates that performed tremendously well in the local elections. Ali Farn in the north of Inishowen took over 2,000 votes, and it was a Fine Gael seat that he took. So it does affect the idea that somehow Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are immune from leaking support over Mica crisis is not an assertion that I agree with. Ali Farn taking over 2,000 votes, to me, he would be the clear candidate, because if you're going to try and win a general election seat or a seat in the Dáil election, you have to have more. I mean, Charles Ward, I was surprised. He wasn't able to be elected to the Donegal County Council. Now the Redress Party are putting him up to go to the Dáil. I think it's a stunning choice by the Redress Party.
I don't know the reason why they made that choice, but maybe they wanted to stay out of Padraig McLaughlin's way. But what they might do is have a fantastic outcome, which might make it look like DCB's not the big issue that it actually is. And I say that with full respect to Mr. Ward.
I think the Redress Party performed tremendously well in the local elections. They took a seat in the Glenties district, for goodness sake. Like, you know, so that wouldn't have been foreseen. While we might have thought that they would have taken seats in the Inishowen district, maybe in the Milford and Letterkenny electoral areas, you know, they had a tremendous local election. And it's almost as if, you know, they came under a bit of pressure on social media not to be running candidates at all. they've kind of chickened out of it a wee bit, like, you know, because it doesn't look to me like they've chosen the best and the strongest candidate, the proven vote getters, for fear of being accused of costing the person a seat. But the thing about the seats as well is like, and, you know, nobody owns a seat. You know, nobody owns a seat. The seats are all up for grabs. So there's five seats the next time, and any party or any individual is entitled to go for it. You know, you don't own the seat. And Padraig McLaughlin, you know, he had the discomfort and of losing his seat in 2016, having taken it in 2011, and worked so hard in the Senate and worked so hard on the ground here then afterwards to win the seat back. But Padraig will know, the same as every other candidate and every other sitting TD, the work that you have to put in to try and retain the seat. And Padraig certainly wouldn't be thinking, it's my seat.
No,
the seat is there to be won, and it's there to be won by anybody. So the Redress Party, I think they've chosen a candidate that, you know, probably will, as you suggest, Greg, will be there, will be present, and probably won't be a huge factor in the election, because they've proven, like, I think Mr. Ward got somewhere in the region of 880 votes in the local election. You know, I don't know, you'd probably need to be getting 7,000 or 8,000 first preferences in the Dáil election, maybe a few more than that, to be in the conversation for taking a seat. And it seems
you
to
see,
me
it leaves, it leaves the week. It leaves the affected voter saying, well, do I go for 100% redress or do I go for Sinn Féin, because Sinn Féin have promised bells and whistles and all that type of stuff. Charlie McConnell is going to be delighted, though, because there's absolutely no doubt he'll be returned to his seat, in my opinion. Sandra Haughey, what do you think of the tactics?
Well, Greg, I would kind of look back to what Paddy Dever, you know, a seasoned campaigner on this issue, and he has come out and said that he didn't want a 100% redress candidate running. You know, that he was back in Padraig McLaughlin, Pearse Doherty, and Thomas Pringle, that they were the ones that have been behind them the whole way along. So it's very difficult to say why, you know, and Sinn Féin, we'll run our own campaign, as we always do. We'll run our own campaign. We don't look at outside influences. Yes, it's there. It was the same in the local elections. We ran our own campaign, sometimes successfully, sometimes not. And that's where we are, you know. But it needs to be, you know, we need anyone out there voting Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael in this general election are not looking at their neighbours, are not thinking about their neighbours. They're not thinking about what we're going through. I, for one, am in the situation like thousands of others, where I can't afford to do my house because I can't afford to get a second mortgage. You know, that's where I am. And I'm working full time, and have been all my life working full time. You know, so, you know, there's no thought process here by the government in what has gone on. It's just, we're just forgotten about. And that's, I know that's a cliche that Donegal's a second class citizens, but we are in this regard. Mm-hmm. We actually are.
The government would argue, though, that you know, they promised that the scheme would be adaptive and flexible, and it would be improved. We're waiting on the new science. I understand you don't agree with that, Sandra, but I do have to try and strike a little balance here. And of course, then we have seen the increase in the allocation per square feet. And also the overall cap on the grant and the retrospective element, which was a big story for some time, the retrospective element being committed to. Joe McHugh, what's your view? You're kind of on three bikes here, obviously. You know, you're a member of Fine Gael, a loyal Fine Gaeler. You did leave the party, though, because of this issue. And at the same time, we are seeing some progress in the issue, but not as far as it needs to go, probably, for you to go back into the party. So all of that, plus the fact, the strategy of 100% redress, what do you think?
One of the things I've learned about in politics from a long, long ago was that the electorate will make their final minds up, you know, maybe a week, 10 days out before the election. So part of that will be what information is going to be provided to them. I know, for example, that Senator Nicky Bradley and John McNulty have been very proactive in trying to get proper detail into the manifesto. So obviously everybody's going to look at what they're going to be proposing in a general election. It's interesting from the Mica redress, from the Defective Blocks campaign that went on in the last local election. Not just the four councillors that were elected, there were a lot of independent candidates got elected on the Defective Blocks issue as well. So either the strategy of the Defective Blocks issue is a very, very far-sighted, clever move. Time will tell. Obviously, the electorate will decide. But one thing is for sure, that anybody listening to this show here today that's gone through the trauma of the de facto blocks issue, and as Sandra said, in her own personal situation, trying to get a mortgage, trying to pay back a credit union loan, trying to or become a quantity surveyor, trying to become an engineer, an architect, trying to do all that work, that will be reflective in the ballot sheet. But one thing that people will look in a general election, they'll look at every candidate, they'll want to hear what everybody has to say. And I believe it'll depend on the strength of manifestos, not just the main political parties, but also the de facto blocks issue as well. They will have to present.
Yeah,
You
could draw a heat map of the county as to how passionate people will be about certain issues, and it would be pretty hot in Inishowen, but that heat map would fade as you head towards Letterkenny and south and west in the county, whether that's true or not, which makes the location of this candidate, Damien. With respect to Mr. Ward, I've chatted to him like all anyone that decides to put themselves up in front of the public. I've got a huge respect for them. But, Damien, it does make you wonder. But you've outlined all that in any case, unless there's something finally you want to add before we take the quick break.
Oh, look, I mean, the election will take its own way, and the campaign and the strength of the campaign and the election will take its own form. And like the redress part, as I said, did tremendously well here in the Inishowen. It is the ground zero for it. And it did do better outside of that. And as Joe says, there was candidates from his district, whether they'd make in their house or not, that were able to get elected on the back of that. So it's who can say how it'll finally go. But it's going to be another interesting election, and we'll see what happens, because big promises were made at public meetings here in Buncrana about, I heard Thomas Pringle promising that the new government would be able to change everything within 3 months of a government being formed, which I found to be like for the birds. That's not going to happen. It looks to me very much that the scheme that's in place and the legislation that's in place is going to have to be worked for the foreseeable future as best as can be done. And I know there's a few little tweaks that have been made to it in the last week or two, and there's a couple of more tweaks that need to be made to it now, hopefully before the doll rises. But it's going to run on, and it's going to run on for 25 years.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see if the retrospective element of these increases is actually legislated for before the doll is dissolved, because that could be critical to the election of here.
That's the thing, like whether they can get it legislated for. I know they have a very busy legislative agenda, and that seems to be what's dictating when the election can be held. It's quite a small amendment that would have to be done in order to provide for that retrospective grant for people that are already within the scheme. But even if it's not legislated for, it's such a straightforward thing that no party post-election, when they form a government, won't put that through eventually. So look, the commitment is there that the retrospective funds will be given. I'm sure it'll be given. I'm in this situation myself, Greg. My house is under reconstruction at the minute, and we're waiting, expecting and depending on those retrospectives.
Sandra, you're affected by this as well, aren't you?
Sure, me and half the place.
Yeah, but Sandra is, you're as well. You've a defective home, do you, Sandra?
I do, yes.
Yeah, we do too. Joe, you don't. Your house predates that, I think. But that's the only reason I say that is there's four people on this call and three have... it's crazy, isn't it? It's unbelievable. Okay, listen, thank you very much for that. That's the voices of Deputy Joe McHugh, Damien Dowd, Sandra Haughey. We are live here from, in case it sounds a little bit different, we're live here from Rush Fitness. Today we are broadcasting from this beautiful premises here. They have never stood still in the 10 years they've been open, always investing, always developing. We were here a couple of years ago as they opened a fantastic new space upstairs. I'm looking forward to catching up with Emmett and Marie and the team. That's going to be coming up after 10 and throughout the course of the final 2 hours. We'll hear some of the initiatives that are ongoing and how you can get in here and get in shape for Christmas. All very exciting. Okay, but first, let us take a break. We'll be back with the weather and the final quarter with our guests after these. By the way, just before I go back to our guests, you are more than welcome to land down to us here at Rush Fitness. It's in Lisnennan here in Letterkenny. The door will be open. Come on in between 10 and 12. Have a look around. Say hello to us. You can see how the gym operates here. You can see how we operate when we're broadcasting as well. We'd love to see you. Right, okay. Thousands of small and medium-sized business owners descended on the capital this week, calling for government action to help them stay in business. What could or should the government be doing, any government, post-election? What could or should they be doing to stop the tsunami of closures which are expected, if not already happening? Sandra Haughey, I'll put that to you if that's okay.
God, Greg, it's kind of one of them questions that's, you know, I mean, the amount of, like, we have, what is it, 270,000 people or something working within the hospitality sector, and then hundreds of thousands working within all the other, some of the other sectors that were there, protesting in beauty salons and et cetera, you know, small businesses, cafes. It's kind of, you know, there's a lot of fear in the self-employed, especially with the cost of living crisis. You know, people don't have the money to go out and spend in smaller businesses and restaurants. I suppose, you know, I mean, some of the stuff that they were, you know, some of the banners were, you know, no VAT, no vote and stuff like that. That was kind of a threat to the government. Probably the 9% VAT rate needs to be returned to hospitality to start off with. And possibly, and I don't think it's, from talking to small businesses, I don't think it's a handout they want. They sort of just want a kind of a bit of a leg up, I think. You know, in some sort of way, you know.
Yeah, would you you mentioned hospitality there. I'm not sure if that was a slip. Do you believe hospitality, given the fact that what we're seeing in hotels, primarily in Dublin and elsewhere, do you believe hospitality should be rewarded with a return to 9%, or should it be better? Would it be better focused on service providers, pubs, and restaurants?
I think service providers, I think to do with the price gouging that goes on in Dublin, is just disgusting and disgraceful. And I would say everyone has experienced it on some level. I know myself, trying to book a hotel room for a concert is just, it's ridiculous prices, you know. But, like, you know, I mean, we need to start to look at that more seriously. There's a lot of fear within the people that I've been talking to, small businesses, that they're full of fear. You know, they're going to close their doors. They employ a lot of people, and we need to, and especially the likes of Donegal and rural areas, we need to be looking at the small businesses to help them along the way.
Okie doke. Joe McHugh, what do you think? Deputy Joe McHugh.
Yeah, look, to reduce the VAT rate, you're talking 800 million, and there was a lot of political momentum to do that. I don't know how accurate this is, but my estimation as to why that didn't happen was because there was a thinking that there's big hotels in Dublin, you know, charging hundreds of euro when there's a big peak demand and all that. So I think what revenue needs to do is there needs to be an acceptance that a hotel in Donegal can't be compared to a hotel in Dublin. And I think you have to look at more targeted measures, because it's an experienced economy now. Since COVID, the public are doing different things. They're going to, you know, they're experiencing different services in different ways. So there has to be an acceptance that there has been that change, number one. You can't compare like with like. And even, you know, I'm going to use Damien Downes as an example. I remember my first time in politics. Damien was a PAYE worker working in the Oireachtas, and somebody who has gone from PAYE to being a small business owner knows exactly what's needed. So I think there needs to be more of a business acumen, business knowledge within the public service, within the civil service, and revenue has to start adapting that things are changing, and there's businesses seriously, seriously struggling today.
Damien?
Yeah, like there's clearly a need for the hotels to be in a different category of VAT from the rest of the sector. They are a slightly different business. I know their revenue is always saying that's very hard to split, and it's very to what happens with a hotel that has a restaurant and so on in it as well. But that's one thing that might help the cafes and the restaurants a wee bit and the bars. But, you know, the 4% VAT rate, it's 4%. Sorry, they're looking for a 4.5% reduction in the VAT. It doesn't seem like an awful lot. I can't see that by itself would be enough for small businesses to survive or to be able to trade. They need better footfall, and they need to be able to attract more people through the doors. And one thing is being tried, and it's only in a pilot project here, is this Buncrana nighttime economy. Buncrana got it's one of, I know, about half a dozen towns, I think, around the country where the government has done a bit of work and given them late licensing laws to try to see if they can revive the nighttime economy. But look, all of that type of hospitality sector has been terribly badly affected. There's lots of businesses have since the country reopened after COVID,
yeah,
and then got hit with this huge inflation. So there's small things that can be done, but how does footfall be improved into these businesses. That is probably quite difficult to, for a government to achieve. And then the labour costs, I think a lot of these small businesses are hit by the labour costs.
Which is the biggest expensive business. I would just say they probably feel that they can retain footfall or improve it if their overheads are reduced somewhat. But we do have to leave it there. Damien Dowd, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so very much. Have a great weekend. It's been great having you on the show as always. We also had Deputy Joe McHugh looking forward to no election in November or December. He doesn't give a flying hoot. Okay. Thanks, Joe. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye. Thanks. And last but not least, Sandra. Thanks so much, Sandra. It's been lovely having you on the show, and hopefully we'll have you on again really soon. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Okay, right. Emmett and Maria will be joining us very shortly because we're live here from Rush Fitness in Letterkenny. They're 10 years in business and there's so much going on. And we're looking forward to chatting with the team here and telling you all about what facilities are here, what they've got to offer and some of the stuff they're up to. Call in. It's an open day between 10 and 12. Get in the car, get on the bike, come down, come in, see what they're doing, see what they could do for you, see what we're doing. And we'll be back with all of that and so much more besides after we take a break for the news and obituary notices.